Welcome to the Holistic Health Podcast, where we delve into topics that bridge wellness and science for the skin, gut, mind, body, and soul. This podcast is brought to you by Gvome, where we believe that each of us has a unique ecosystem and path to reach our full vitality.
I'm your host, Dr. Raja Sivamani, an integrative physician and an Ayurvedic practitioner. Gvome is the notion that our jiva, the Sanskrit word for vitality and the essence of life, merges with our many ecosystems that compose our biome to form our unique jivome. This podcast is meant for educational and informational purposes only. None of the information presented here are a substitute for professional medical care, and this podcast does not constitute medical advice. If you have a medical concern, please consult with your physician.
Welcome, everyone. Today, we are talking about approaches to infertility and specifically holistic approaches. We're really lucky today because we have Dr. Almatma, who is a naturopathic doctor, and she got her naturopathic degree from the University of Bridgeport College of Naturopathic Medicine, also has a master's in nutrition. So talk about an expert in this area. And she's been practicing for over 10 years. We really are super thrilled to have you on the podcast. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
And just as another little brief intro, you specialize, it looks like, you know, in general, your practice is focused in on fertility, pregnancy, postpartum. And I want to talk a little bit about your book as well, but you've written a book called Fertility Secrets, What Your Doctor Didn't Tell You About Baby Making. So very interesting. So can you kind of give us an overview on the kind of patients that you're seeing when it comes to infertility? And I know that we were going to jump into some of the holistic approaches, but
yeah,
what are some of the common issues that you end up seeing in your clinic around infertility?
You know, so most of the time people come in and they don't know why they're not getting pregnant, or they're getting pregnant but keep having a miscarriage. So that tends to be like a really big bulk of our population, is that we're actually helping them navigate the whole area of unexplained infertility, quote unquote. And I'm doing air quotes because we, you know, like a lot of people get put in these buckets of unexplained. And my perspective on that is you can be unexplained in the Western medicine realm, but when you actually break it down and get to the root cause, there is no unexplained. There's always an explanation. And it's just like, are we looking deep enough to dig and figure out what's happening under the surface? And often these people are like, hey, my hormones look perfect, still not getting pregnant, what's up? And then the other thing that I find a lot there, of course, there's the fair number of patients who will come post IVF. So they've tried a few rounds of IVF, they've probably tried some IUIs. And by the time they come in, they're like, I've tried it all, this is not working. Do you have something else that could possibly help? That's another like subsect of our population. And then a fair number of like PCOS, endometriosis, because those two conditions, with PCOS, one in two women will, with PCOS, will have infertility. And for endometriosis, it's one in three. So those are obvious conditions for us to be working with, because often these women are struggling and Western medicine doesn't have a great answer. So sometimes the fertility treatments will work great, but sometimes they just need a more holistic kind of approach to their hormones and their fertility.
Yeah, I like your sensible approach here, because I think a lot of folks, and these are challenging cases, aren't they? Because if they're, if people are coming in and seeing you after they've had IVF and whatnot, I mean, obviously there's a lot of frustration and there's a lot of just, you know, hope that they're starting to lose along the way. Are you able to help all these women? And in some cases, does it mean just getting to know that, you know, sometimes it's not guaranteed that they're going to get pregnant? I mean, what is the success rate of going the holistic approach?
Yeah. So we get asked that question over and over again. And what I found is that for women, I would say generally under 40, our success rate is like 80%. So these are, whether they've been through IVF or not, it really doesn't matter, because once they come into us, they're in a whole different realm, right? So they're having failed IVF cycles actually gives me some information, because sometimes they'll come and say like, hey, they harvested like 20 eggs, only 3 of them fertilized to day 3. That tells me, okay, there's a huge egg quality issue. And that's an amazing thing that we can help with. Other times they'll say, oh, they only retrieved like 2 eggs. And then we might have a very different conversation about whether or not natural medicine can help. But most of the time, I like to talk to people up front and make sure that we can help them before they even start working with us. And I would like to say that I am a pretty good predictor of the people that we can help and the people that we can't. So, you know, we get asked like, oh, how's your fertility success rate so high? And I'm like, well, it's high because I'm pre-screening people to the ones that I think we can help. So 80% of the time I'm right. And most of those people will get pregnant and have a baby. But for the people that, you know, if we accepted everyone and had loads of clients and that kind of thing, then we might have a very different skew to the success.
I think it's really important to go through that screening process. So who do you typically think makes for a good candidate to screen in that then you say, okay, let's go to the next level and start thinking through what could help?
Yeah, everyone should get screened, because I feel like holistic fertility is just such a unknown field. Everyone knows to go get acupuncture, right? But even with acupuncture, I'll say when I first started practicing, I had on average 80 to 90% of the people would come and say, oh yeah, I've been doing acupuncture for 3 years and it's still not working. And I'm like, you went to someone for 3 years without seeing any results? I don't understand how that happens, especially with fertility, because by the time they come see us, they're like, I wanted to be pregnant 2 years ago. I don't have another 2-3 years to invest. This needs to happen quick. When I first started out, they would give me like 3 months. And now I've extended it to like 5 months, because we do see so many of these kind of PCOS, endometriosis, hormone imbalances. Like, they've had these issues almost their whole lives, at least their whole menstrual life. So, you know, we just need more time to address all of the hormone imbalances. But in general, we have a pretty condensed kind of intensive approach, because we only have a short period of time with these women. So my goal is like, how do we not only do this holistically in a way that is like helping support not just your fertility, but all of your hormones throughout your whole body. And in addition to that, be able to, in addition, make that shift and that transformation happen quickly enough so that they're not in this waiting game or this, I'm going to see this naturopathic doctor for 3 years before seeing any kind of tangible result.
Yeah, and 3 years is quite a bit of time. Probably goes to show how, you know, people want to try to stick to something. They have that, maybe that discipline of, gosh, I just want something to help me. And, you know, they try to put their faith into it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it just shows how dedicated these folks are.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I feel like the fertility population is so dedicated. It's often such a deep calling to be a mother or a parent, right? So,
right.
You know, a lot of the couples who are struggling are coming in with, we really, really, really want this. And we maybe have tried the other options given to us. Sometimes they don't even have options, but the people who have been given options, they often just try it, right? IUI, IVF. I kind of got into this field because I had my own journey with questioning whether I should freeze my eggs, what was I going to do? Time was running out. I didn't have the right person, et cetera, et cetera. And I kind of went irate with anger at the lies that women are being fed. And I felt like I needed to be that strong voice of, let's look at the facts. Let's look at the fact that your possibility of IVF success is like 30% under the age of 35. After you get over 35, you're starting to see that decline. And we need to be able to say, okay, that's a good option if that's all we have. But how do we take it to the next level and look at all the underlying things before we get to that place of trying out something that may or may not be successful?
And when you said you were concerned about the misinformation, are you referring to the fact that maybe women don't realize all the options that they have? Or if you could talk a little bit more about that, that would
be... You know, I feel like as a woman, pre-information, right? When I was just in my early 30s and I don't have a partner, maybe I should freeze my eggs, because I also, in naturopathic medical school, learned that my fertility would magically disappear at 35. So for me, it was a very personal journey that got me digging into the research papers. But I was believing that, hey, I could just freeze my eggs, and when I'm ready, when I'm 40 or something, I can go and take those eggs and turn them into a baby. Or I felt like, oh yeah, IVF is so amazing and it's so successful. And even talking to a lot of my friends, women that I've treated now, they'll come in and say, oh, can I just walk into an IVF clinic and I'm going to instantly be pregnant and I'm going to walk out with a baby? So there's this feeling that I don't think is promoted by doctors. I think it's more kind of the media that is media and maybe our pop culture, where there are so many celebrities who are coming out about their fertility issues, but they're opinion about it is, oh yeah, I just went to IVF and this amazing IVF doctor implanted a baby and now I have a baby. So we've made it seem like it's so easy and so instantaneous that we don't need to prepare and we don't need to do a lot. We're just going to, like, when we're ready, go to an IVF clinic and have a baby. And the reality is there's a drastic decline in the IVF success rates as we age. So we really have to start wondering, like, this idea of, oh, I'm going to go and have a baby at 45 or 50 at an IVF clinic is just unrealistic. IVF can do amazing things, but it's not a miracle. It's not like God's coming down and handing you a child, right? So we really need to put it all into perspective and have that conversation really earlier of, what am I doing to preserve my fertility? How can I, if I'm not ready right now, how can I be proactive so that when I get to 38, 39, 40, whatever it is, it's not a struggle? And if it is a struggle, if I'm there now and it is a struggle, then what are my options? Do I know what all of my options are? And often I think people know IVF and people know acupuncture. And those are the two things that are, like, so vastly available in media. It's talked about a lot. So I think there's some awareness about it. But if we can expand that to, okay, what other options do I have? Do I have any other things? And even having that thought early on, do I have hormonal issues that, for PCOS women, it's a lot like they're given birth control from the point that they're 14, 15, and they don't realize that there is an underlying issue. So that when they try to get pregnant, it's not going to be as simple as, let me get off of the birth control and I'm going to have a baby.
No, I think that's a very good point. Thanks for taking us through that whole aspect of how we receive information and how to put that into context. And with that in mind, what does a holistic approach to infertility look like? I mean, what should be included in that conversation?
Yeah, I think my perspective on it is that one of the main things that we are missing is really getting to the root of the problem, right? And you kind of have an Ayurvedic background as well, so you probably relate to this. There's a synchronization in the body of all of these different systems working together, the thyroid, the adrenals, our neurotransmitters, all playing a role in our reproductive system. And the reproductive system is one of the first things to turn off when things are out of sync in the body. The body just says, well, I need to focus my energy on survival. If I'm stressed out, it's fight or flight. I need to focus on survival. I'm definitely not thinking about reproduction. Similarly, if there are gut issues and I'm not absorbing nutrients, the body's wisdom knows that being nutrient deficient is a really simple reason to not reproduce because I don't have the nutrients to provide to this baby. So our body's wisdom is so incredibly intricate and beautiful. And if things are out of sync, fertility doesn't happen. So from that very foundational place, thinking about root cause as the main thing to dig into. If you have blood sugar imbalances, testosterone issues, too much estrogen, too little progesterone, thyroid issues, adrenal issues, even like I said, neurotransmitters, like I've seen plenty of patients who have dopamine and serotonin imbalance, which then leads to an estrogen progesterone imbalance. So having all of those things looked at and optimized is really what I think holistic fertility is about. So making sure that all the parts of the body that connect to the reproductive system, which in my opinion is like what doesn't connect to the reproductive system.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think everything connects in, right?
Yes, exactly. So it's really like, if I can call it an overhaul of your entire health and being like an 8 or 9 or 10 out of 10 for a good amount of time before even trying to conceive.
Yeah, see, I think these are such important conversations to have. We sometimes focus in on just the lab values or whatnot. And the other thing that, and we've talked about in previous conversations, is what is the role of stress? And you brought that up, you know, if you're in fight or flight scenario, and that can be chronic stress too, isn't it? If
yes.
You're chronically in a, say, stressful environment, stressful job, stressful relationship, or even just anxiety, I mean, I'm sure that's got to add to it. So I'm curious, how do you approach those other factors in life, like sleep, and we'll get into diet a little bit with you, but how do you talk through stress and sleep, and what role does that play in fertility?
So stress plays a really, really big role, and it's kind of hard, right? Because I have these conversations with patients a lot where I say, hey, your job is the most stressful thing. It's stressing you out. What are your chances of shifting? Like, how can we shift this? And sometimes the answer is, I can't. Like, I need this job and it's not going to change. So my perspective on stress these days has really become shift what we can, obviously. But for the things that we can't, we really need to teach our internal system, neurotransmitters, hormones, the communicators of our body to react differently. And I think that that is a lot of the mind-body work that we do is focus on how can we help support this person to become stress resilient. So that's really like, instead of experiencing everything in our lives as stress, we can have a different relationship with it. And that is like, if we perceive stress as a challenge, there's actually a different set of neurotransmitters and signals that go out, or we can perceive it as a tend and befriend. That's another pathway that stress can go down, but those are not learned pathways. We as science are just discovering these pathways, and because our bodies have been in the basic fight or flight modes, we don't have the tools to shift out of that.
This is very interesting because you're saying instead of letting stress dominate how you're going to react, you're taking a different approach here, aren't you? You're saying, well, let's see how we can have a healthy relationship with stress. And so
yes.
That we kind of gain a little bit more control over it.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Because we can be stressed. Stress can be a good thing. Like when we are going into the challenge pathway, stress can really play a role in helping us to up level and grow and all of those things. So it can be beneficial. For tend and befriend, that's a major feminine stress pathway that we ignore as a society. We have essentially ignored that pathway. And more researchers are talking about it because, like, men have this pathway, but it's often women that are going to choose tend and befriend. And it's really about creating community. And when you have created community, you're going to feel less stressed out. When you have support systems in place, you're going to feel less stressed out. So having those in place really helps shift the dynamic out of that major stress response into, I got this, I can do this. And if I don't got this, the people around me got this, right? So it's really about shifting our internal place and the patterns that we have, and then consciously choosing, hey, my husband is a major support system. And when I'm stressed out, I need to be able to learn to ask for support. And that is one of the hardest things women tell me, right? For myself too, but most women that we work with tend to be type A, high performing, super amazing women who are used to taking care of shit on their own. So asking for help is one of the biggest challenges. So as we're working with them, this is part of the journey, is like, how do we change our relationship to stress? Because if you're stressed out now, let's say your stress is like a 7 out of 10 now, once you have a baby, that stress is going to go up. So if we don't have support systems in place, if we don't have a different relationship and dynamic, it's only going to get worse. So our goal is really, how do we set up two healthy human beings to even a greater amount of health, but make sure that we're giving them the tools that they'll need after they get pregnant? So how do we create like healthy family systems that happen even before the baby comes into the picture?
I love how you're taking us through this approach. And then I wanted to shift our conversation to sleep as well. I know we touched upon it very briefly. Can you talk about sleep hygiene, and more specifically, what should be considered good sleep hygiene when thinking about fertility?
Yeah, this is a great question. So sleep hygiene, sleep in general is super important. One of the main hormones involved in sleep is melatonin. Most people know that. What may be lesser known is that cortisol and melatonin have a flipped relationship. So if you have cortisol floating around in your system in the evening, guess what? You're not making melatonin. Melatonin is one of the main antioxidants that your body produces for the reproductive system. So I don't know about you, but when I first realized this, my mind was blown, right? I was like, oh my God, this is so important.
No, sleep is so important. I'll tell you, in Ayurveda, sleep is considered, we have this concept called rasayana, which is anything that can help you mitigate stress and bolster your ability to take on future stress. Sleep is like up there as one of the top ways, getting good sleep, that is, to restore that.
Yeah. So my quick little tools for sleep hygiene, or like checklist, if you want to call it, it needs to be completely dark in your room. No electronics, Wi-Fi turned off. Like if you have phones in the room, they need to be in airplane mode. Ideally, you can turn off your router in the home. Ideally, that's a different scenario. Definitely do not have it in your bedroom where you sleep though. And then all the little LED lights from tech need to be turned off. You need to either turn off computers, TVs, monitors, screens a few hours, 2 to 3 hours before you plan to go to sleep. Or you can use a blue light filter on a phone. On a computer, it's not strong enough, so you need blue light filter glasses. And for TV, it's definitely not strong enough. So if you watch TV at night, which it's fine. I feel like a lot of people use that as a way to decompress, which is okay. just make sure you have your blue light filter glasses on. Otherwise, even if you fall asleep, okay, your melatonin production is not happening. And it's going to set you up for a disaster the next morning when you're trying to wake up. So cortisol and melatonin are constantly trying to swing from one to the other. Daytime cortisol needed within the first 30 minutes of you waking up, you need a push of cortisol, and that's called the cortisol awakening response. And when women don't have this, their hormones are out of whack. So if you didn't use blue light filter glasses at night, watch TV till really late, went to bed at 11, woke up at 6, you also didn't get enough hours of sleep. And then on top of that, you wake up, you rush to work, you didn't get any sunlight in the morning, your cortisol awakening response never happened. And then to boost, you probably needed coffee because you didn't have any cortisol in the morning. So then you took a shot of coffee to wake up.
A vicious cycle, isn't it?
Yeah, it's over. Like, we just did all the things that killed our reproductive system in a matter of 10 hours. Yeah, so make sure you have the blue light filter glasses. And then if you can, within the first 30 to 45 minutes of waking up, get sunlight or full spectrum light if sunlight is not an option. And that really stimulates that cortisol awakening response.
No, I love these fantastic tips. And you kind of segued into the next question with the coffee point, which is, should we be thinking about diet and its role in fertility? And are there things that can be detrimental? And what do you think would be foods that would be helpful?
Yeah, great questions. So definitely coffee is a question I get asked a million times. So my take on coffee is, if you need to have it, don't drink it. Meaning, like, if you feel like, oh my God, there's no way I can function without coffee, you absolutely cannot drink coffee. If your coffee is like, sure, I can have it some days, not have it other days, I'm fine, then sure, have some coffee. It's probably okay for you. But at the most, it's like 8 to 10 ounces of coffee. It's not like 3 pots in a day, which I kid you not, I had a patient who came in, she was drinking 3 pots of coffee a day.
You know, it's probably not that unusual to see people drink. I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot. Some people that drink quite a bit. You know, can you believe though, I've managed my entire life to get away without drinking any coffee except when I was 3 years old with my grandfather, and then I put the coffee to the side. Obviously, I'm not a woman looking for fertility, but in general, these issues can be cross-cutting. But yeah, that's totally. Quite a bit of coffee.
Yeah, exactly. So you can limit your coffee to like a cup, cup and a half, maybe. And then as far as diet goes, my keys are lots of fruits and vegetables. Like, the diet needs to be focused on plant foods. And I...
Any specific plants?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, totally. Way more vegetables than fruit, for one. You know how they say like 7 to 9 servings of fruits and vegetables? I say like 7 to 8 of vegetables and 1 to 2 of fruit, if that. And then in terms of the subsects of that, you're going to get the most bang for your buck in terms of vegetables with all the greens, right? Green leafy vegetables, and then all the different colors. So when I look in my shopping cart, I want to see a rainbow of colors of vegetables. And then the more variety that you get from your vegetables and food in general is a good idea. So not eating kale every single day because you think that's the healthiest. There's no like the healthiest vegetable. You want to do all of the green leafy vegetables equally, rotate through them. And then the starchy vegetables may not be the best to eat all the time, right? So don't count French fries as your vegetable. You can have potatoes on occasion, sweet potatoes on occasion, but focus on the more fibrous vegetables as your go-to. And then in terms of fruit, you're going to focus on the darker, deeper, richer colors. So the berries, purples, reds, etc. And then the high fiber fruits like apples, oranges. And then you can do watermelon and stuff like that on occasion, but do it in season. A lot of the fruit is very seasonal. So don't eat watermelon or pineapple in the winter. It just doesn't make sense. It doesn't grow in the winter. It only grows in summertime. So eat those more seasonally.
I think this is fantastic. We could probably talk for ages on this, but this has been a really great overview. I think it just goes to show that there's more at play when it comes to the body, whether it's fertility, or I'm sure there's many other factors within women's health and even men's health where there's a holistic perspective to take. And we should do a few more of these podcasts, but I wanted people to get an idea of where you practice. And if you could just give us a brief idea of where people could find you on social media to connect.
Oh yeah, totally. So on social, we're on Instagram at holistic_fertility_doctor. Easy, holistic fertility doctor. And then online, our website is holisticfertilitycenter.com. And we do have very in-person practice in Berkeley. And then we have some things that we do online. So we do serve people who are not located locally.
Dr. Amathma, really appreciate your time today, your expertise, and looking forward to learning more about these holistic approaches to women's health as we go along. And thank you for your time today.
Thanks so much for having me.
This is the Holistic Health Podcast, brought to you by Givaume, where we believe that cultivating a healthy ecosystem unique to you is important to living vital and living well. Don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to our channel, and be sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and visit us at givaume.com. Check out our membership options to take your health to the next level.